ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ योगेन चित्तस्य पदेन वाचां मलं शरीरस्य च वैद्यकेन योपाकरोत्तं प्रवरं मुनीनां पतञ्जलिं प्राञ्जलिरानतोऽस्मि। वी आर् डिस्कसिङ्ग् दि सेकेण्ड् चाप्टर् आफ् दि पतञ्जलि योगसूत्रास् आल्सो called as Sadhana Pada. In this Pada, Patanjali mainly focuses on how we can attain Asampragnata Samadhi. So what is the practice? It's called Kriya Yoga. Kriya Yoga consists of three things. First, Tapasya, Swadhyaya, Ishvara Pranidhanani. Tapaha means austerity. Austerity means, there are two meanings of austerities. One, to forbear whatever experiences we will be going through. In every human life, there will be undesirable, unwanted circumstances. How do we take them? As austerity, inevitable austerity. Also, it has a deeper significance. According to Vedanta philosophy, which includes yoga philosophy, if we are going through certain unavoidable, difficult circumstances, who is the root cause? We are the root causes. It is our karmas which bring about these circumstances which will give us pain. Secondly, some people would like to progress in life, and they do undertake certain types of voluntary activities which can also be called austerities. For example, to study the scriptures is one of the biggest austerities. It is not understood that you can just read take any scripture and then go on reading it. We must have to develop that taste to enjoy it and also to understand it. To enjoy it, we must have love for God. Because without love for God, without devotion for God, a scripture is not at all enjoyable. Better you enjoy some mystery novels or watch TV. Secondly, the scriptures will also not only give enjoyment, but they also give us deep understanding. This is a very common thing. The more we study, the more we are capable of understanding. But there is one condition, and that condition is we must gradually become purer and purer in our heart. How do we become pure? Through the practice of spiritual disciplines. So, simple example would be, if a person has got a cataract, and he wants to see clearly, it would not be possible. He sees something, distorted experience. But if he wants to see properly, he has to get rid of that cataract. We are all 100% cataracted people. I would be generous, not 100%. We would be cataracted, let us say 90%. What is this cataract called? We all know it. That is called Maya. Through the haze, through the glass of mind, one way of speaking, through the glass of time, space and causation, one way of looking, through the glass of name and form. This is called our cataract. In simple words, we are seeing everything through Maya. Let me dwell on this topic because it is such a beautiful concept. We give the classical example, in semi-darkness, when a man is walking, suddenly he sees a snake. Now, is there a snake? No. But What happens? He is seeing a snake. So where is the snake? In him. Why is he seeking a snake? Because that light is not enough. There are animals for whom this vision is so clear. The more the darkness, the better they see. Some animals. It is the problem is within us. Our eyes are covered with Maya. What is the way out? We have to slowly remove it. Cataract has to become less. How does it become less? Through the practice of voluntary austerities. So this is called austerity. Two types I said. One type is undesirable, painful experiences come to each one of us. Be it a householder, a monk, a man, a woman, it doesn't really matter. But there is no point in going on complaining about it. What should we do? We should develop that special type of attitude called tapasya, austerity. Okay, that's fine. What is the second thing? Voluntarily taking up certain activities like japa, meditation. It is not obligatory, but we do take up those things because we have faith. It will help us in the future. So this is austerities. Second, swadhyaya. Swadhyaya means study of the scriptures. And we can really study the scriptures only when we get joy. Otherwise it becomes meaningless routine. And the more we love the scriptures, the more we enjoy them. And for enjoying the scriptures, I already told you, we need to love God. We need to love our life. We need to believe that there is something which the scripture alone can tell us. What is that something? That each soul is potentially divine. No chemistry, no psychology, no history, no other secular science would ever be able even to point, let alone tell us. Only the scripture tells us. But to understand this point deeply, we have to do sadhana. As our mind becomes progressively purer, our understanding also becomes deeper. This is the one meaning of swadhyaya, study of the scripture. There is another meaning. If it is split in another way, swa-adhyaya, study. Constantly go on studying one's own mind. How did my day go today? Swami Brahmananda used to tell, at night, each spiritual aspirant should review the whole day and how much time did I think about God? How much time did I think about the world? How much time was I happy? How much time I was unhappy? You know, people do not tell these things to you. Even Swamis do not tell these things to you. You go on analyzing, how much time was I happy? How much time I was unhappy? Most of the time, we are neither happy nor unhappy. And of the remaining time, most of the time we are grumbling, the unsatisfaction comes into the mind, and only occasionally we get flashes of what we call happiness, which doesn't long last. So, what is the use of this analysis? How much time I was happy, so how much time I was unhappy? Because this is one of the key points of discrimination. Sukha, dukkha, viveka. Why was I unhappy? You know, the dog was barking when I was going, so I was unhappy. We are all prone to that. So, okay, the dog is barking. So why are you barking for such a long time? You are going on barking within yourself. I am unhappy. Why? Because the dog is barking. The dog's bark ended after few seconds. But the barking within our mind is going on and on. Somebody tells something. What does it matter? I cannot control the other person. Okay, whether there is a reason, no reason, the other person had taken this attitude and that person is reacting towards me like this. He talks rubbish, he criticizes me, and he tries to pull me down. He doesn't honor me. Okay, all fine. But what does it matter? Should you go on being unhappy? There are billions who have cause to be unhappy because they do not have food, their life is not safe, and they do not have shelter. We are not thinking about them. So, this kind of discrimination, This is only beginning of the discrimination. Let me tell you. What is the deeper discrimination? I want to, oh mind, do you want to be happy? Sure. Then are you producing causes of happiness? This is one of the most important points we are always missing. Does happiness fall from the sky? Does unhappiness fall from the sky? See, simple example. You want beautiful flowers in your garden. What do you need to do? You have to bring the seeds and then cultivate the soil and put the seeds and then take care of them. That is called sowing the seeds of flowers or fruits, anything. What about sukha and dukkha? They are called fruits. Sukha is the fruit of dharma and dukkha is the fruit of adharma. So if I want to be happy, then I have to sow the seeds. What is the seed? Only one seed, dharma. What is dharma? Study the scriptures. You will understand what is dharma. What is your duty as a father, as a mother, as a child, as a teacher, as a worker, as a devotee? Every devotee has got his own dharma. That all of you know what I am going to speak just now. And yet we have to remind ourselves again and again. What is the duty of a Ramakrishna's devotee? Has he got duties or not? I am not talking about how home duties, office duties. I am talking about devotee's duties. What are the devotee's duties of a Ramakrishna especially? It applies to everybody. But I am specifically giving this example. See, Ramakrishna has given 5 commandments. You develop bhakti for God. Then how to develop? 4 yogas. Karma yoga, bhakti yoga, raja yoga, jnana yoga. Cultivate satsanga. Now and then go into solitude. Always discriminate between what is real, what is not real, what is eternal and what is temporary. And live like a maid servant in the house of a rich man. Now, these are the, according to all of us, according to me, these are the 5 commandments of Sri Ramakrishna. So what is the duty of every devotee of Sri Ramakrishna? Every night we have to sit and say, did I obey the commandments of Sri Ramakrishna? Do I really want God? Am I cultivating satsanga? Am I now and then thinking of God in my mind? Am I discriminating always? And am I living like a maid servant? A detached life. Detached life means not indifference, but the effects of both happiness and unhappiness do not last. Neither they are deep, nor they last for a long time. So this is how each one of us have got our own dharmas. So this is called Swadhyaya. Every night we have to remind, if we sincerely wish to progress in spiritual life. What is the third thing? So much is in our hands. We do not know about the future. Therefore, Patanjali tells, Bhagavad Gita tells, every scripture tells, Sri Ramakrishna tells, every day we sing also. What is that? Self-surrender. Ishvara Pranidhana. Surrender yourself to God. These 3 constitute what Patanjali calls Kriya Yoga Sadhana Pada. Then also, what is the purpose of sadhana? To become enlightened, to know who we are. What are the obstacles? So 5 obstacles are there. 5 obstacles, not really 5 obstacles, but in a way 5 obstacles. We have already discussed it. They are called klesha. Klesha means pain-bearing obstructions. Of these pain-bearing obstructions, the root cause, very root cause is called avidya. Avidya means ignorance. Ignorance means taking for granted, I am not the Atman, but I am something else. I am the non-Atman, body, mind, etc. That is the primary root cause of our problems, pains, suffering. Out of this, how does avidya manifest? In the form of egotism. That is called asmita. I am so and so. I am a man. I am a woman. Even to say I am a devotee. The highest type of asmita, which is condemned in the scriptures. I am a knower of God. I am Brahmagnani. I am the Noira Brahman. That is, anybody who says I am a Noira Brahman is not a Noira Brahman. Upanishad tells us. Why? Because if you are a Noira Brahman, you don't say that. To whom are you going to tell? Are you going to attend a party with a big badge and say, I am a Brahmagnani? No. So, that asmita means egotism. This egotism manifests in three forms. What is that? Raga, dvesha and abhinivesha. Raga means intense attachment to things which give us pleasure or happiness. Dvesha means intense dislike to those things which give us the opposite of happiness, suffering. And intense clinging to our life, what we call our life. So again, the coming aphorisms will give us a very beautiful explanation. Very briefly, what I want to discuss, that this is, what did I say? That five pain-bearing modifications of the mind. What is that? Sukha. Sukha means what? Unhappiness. Have you thought about it? We all want happiness, and here you are telling that happiness is one of the most pain-bearing things in this world. It is one of the kleshas. Klesha means that which binds us is called a klesha. That which brings bondage always means suffering. Always remember, simplest translation of the word, bondage means suffering. Our scriptures tell us we are of the nature of sat, chit and ananda, bliss. And any type of suffering, that is an obstruction, that is called avidya, non-atman. Okay, so how can happiness be a bondage? We are all running after happiness. And here is, there are certain things which give us happiness. But why is it called bondage? Because, first of all, we have to distinguish between the bliss that comes from knowing who we are, God realization, and in every other type of happiness that comes. We are talking about the second type of unhappiness, which comes from experiencing objects in this world. And every experience of any object in this world has three defects. How many defects? Three. What are those three? First of all, it is the happiness that we get, the pleasure we get is very, very limited. Time limited. How much time can you enjoy a sweet? Very little time. Every experience is very, very limited in time and in quality and in quantity. First, but the second thing, every experience of pleasure in this world instantaneously brings its opposite, which is pain. As soon as you finish eating the sweet, then first of all, it is painful to digest it. Secondly, you are in this, what you call, oh, this is okay, but the other one would have been better. The other one. How many things you can enjoy at a time? Only one. And that too for a short time. And it brings its opposite. This is what Swami Vivekananda told. Happiness comes with a crown of misery on its head. But though we hear it, though we read it, it doesn't go into our minds. This is the second. Every experience of pleasure brings in its wake its opposite instantaneously. Third, every pleasurable experience binds us because the mind says, I want it again. That creates a desire. That creates what you call samskara. People are not able to get out. You know, people eat so much. Why? They want pleasure. Whatever drugs, drinks, all these things bring some amount of satisfaction, pleasure or happiness. But what happens? It brings bondage. I want more. That means what? I want more means what? I do not want to move from this state. I want to be always in this state. So these are the three inherent defects. Then we move on to the third effect of ignorance, which is called abhinivesha. Abhinivesha means intense clinging to life. Here, this, first of all, is a swa-rasa-vahi. That means this fear that I may die. It is there from the lowest insect to the highest evolved soul. Even this Gaudapada, who was out and out Advaitin, he says, even the most advanced yogi, when the time comes for plunging into asamprajnata samadhi or nirvikalpa samadhi, he shudders. Why? It is the death of the ego. Do you recollect any examples? I know, you know the, but it's just now, it is not right now, it is not coming. Sri Ramakrishna wanted to give nirvikalpa samadhi to Swami Vivekananda. Instantaneously withdrew. Of course, there are reasons why he did that. I had already discussed about it. But in case you have forgotten, the reason is not that he was not ready for the experience, but there was a mission awaiting him, which is to be a teacher of humanity. Therefore, he had to go through certain experiences so that he could empathize with people who are in that condition but who want to get out. For example, atheists or skeptics, or for those who do not believe in a form of God, etc., he had to go through. It was for that purpose he could not take it by divine will. Otherwise, Sri Ramakrishna used to tell that he was what you call a dhyana siddha, perfect in meditation. He came from that state. So the question of that he was not ready to accept Sri Ramakrishna's touch was very irrational, it becomes. Okay. What is this we are discussing? This intense clinging to life. As in the ignorant, so in the learned, this firmly established inborn fear of annihilation is the affliction called abhinivesha. All creatures fear death. Every creature always has this craving. Let me never be non-existent. Let me be alive. One who has not felt the dread of death before cannot have this kind of craving. Okay, I will give you the essence of the arguments given, beautiful arguments. One of the first arguments, derivations, that Patanjali derives from this, why do we fear death? This fear, where from this fear comes? After all, we are just, even a just born baby, or even an insect, you put your foot, it wriggles. It is telling in its language, do not destroy me. I want to be alive. I want to be alive. So why is this? Because of the theory of reincarnation. Why is this fear? Because millions of times before, we had gone through this death experience and we know that it is the most fearful experience in our life. There is nothing equivalent to that. Do we fear going to bed at night? Do we fear going into deep sleep? Why? Why is it that we do not fear? Do you know why? Because we are 150% sure we are going to wake up. I will also put you another question if you want to understand it properly. Just imagine that every night you go to bed and next morning you wake up to something totally new. The people are new, the house is new, everything is absolutely new. Now, when you go to bed before, would you be happy or would you be unhappy? We'll be unhappy. You know why? Because this fear comes because of other reason. What reason? Fear of losing what we know already firmly and fear of the unknown. We have never experienced anybody coming after death and telling us, okay, I am alive, I am in such and such a place, it's a nice place or it's whatever it is. There are instances, only some people know it. I'll give an example also, you know. This Sri Ramakrishna's younger brother, you know, his second brother, Rameshwar, he was dead. People knew that he was going to die. He had a very intimate friend, close friend, a little distance away from his home. And he also knew that this Rameshwar is not going to live for a long time. Any time death may come. But of course we do not know what time it comes. At about midnight, there was a knock. And he opened. He looked. There was nobody. So he was wondering. At this, I heard this. I opened the door. Then suddenly voice came. I am Rameshwar. Just now I have given up my body. You cannot see me. I have come to bid you goodbye. He must have loved him very much nicely. And then this man ran. to Rameshwar's house, and then just few minutes before Rameshwar had left, they were all weeping there. Now, the point is, what will you do if somebody knocks and then you open the door and then say, I am dead? You don't see anybody, I am dead. What will be your reaction? I think mostly we would be fearing. But anyway, coming back to our subject, what is the point we are discussing? Why do everyone fear death? That's because we are losing what we know, whether it is happy or unhappy. Second, fear of the unknown. So, the objection to this that comes is instinct. So, that's instinct. Now, what is instinct? You say, this is what psychologists and scientists and ordinary people... No, it is instinct. What do you mean by instinct? When you have learned to driving very well, you sit in the car and you may be talking on the mobile phone or talking to somebody. You drive nonchalantly, isn't it? Instinctively you are driving. So we have got so many things are instinct within us. We are creatures of instincts. This is what we say, creatures of habits. We react automatically to some foods, to some people, to some places, to some circumstances, to some setups. We do not sit there and think, why am I reacting like this? We just react. That is what is called an unthinking life, unexamined life, in Plato's words. Okay, so this the objection for reincarnation. No, you don't need to bring the theory of reincarnation. It is just instinct. How did you get instinct? When do you get instinct? Instinct is nothing but involved reason before you had experience. Can you understand? This is what Swamiji says. Instinct is nothing but involved reason. Do you understand what is the meaning of involved? We had, through some experiences, we had come to certain conclusions, and that conclusion is rational conclusion. For example, this man dies, that man dies, the other man dies. So any man that we know, either he is dead or he is going to die. Is there any exception? Therefore, by this experience we reason out that death is the normal nature of everybody. This is called reason. And afterwards, it becomes an instinct. Once we come to that conclusion, and until something proves opposite to that reason, we instinctively, without thinking means we thought of it before. That is called instinct. You know, you learn typewriting. After even 50 years, instinctively it comes. You know, bicycle riding, the same thing happens. So, if this is the reason given, fear is instinct. A Hindu or a Vedantin asks, a small baby, why does he fear death? This is one. Swami Vivekananda gives another example. Somebody had put duck's eggs under a hen, and then the hen hatched them. And imagine, this hen is living near the edge of a small pond. What is the instinct of these ducklings? Instantaneously, they jumped towards the water. And the mother hen is, don't go there, you are going to drown. Because the hen, it is not the nature of the hen or chickens to go into the water. Whereas, it is instinctive. Where from this duckling got this instinct of jumping into the water? Anyway, this is one of the arguments given by Patanjali, is that this is the doctrine of reincarnation. That means we had many births before, we are going to have many births later on also. So I gave, they discussed that what is instinct? It is nothing but involved reason. Or many times when we experience something, we come to certain definite conclusions, thereafter it becomes instinct within us. It's what instinct means, unthinking reaction. So the other objection that comes is, you know, you don't need to have this reincarnation theory. After all, you know, you see other people die. We all see, okay, that means, this person died. And no, none of us has ever seen any dead person coming back to us and telling us. Therefore, that as if that man's life is totally extinct. I mean, we don't know whether he is alive, whether he is totally gone, or whether he is having some experience. We have no experience at all, excepting scripture telling us what happens. So, this is this argument, seeing others, this comes. But you cannot apply that. Why? Because just because you don't see, just because 100% of the people don't know, doesn't mean there is no life afterwards. Now, a stronger reason against this argument that we develop fear of death, seeing others die and never coming back to life is, every scripture tells us, even those who do not believe in reincarnation, for example, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, they do not believe in reincarnation. But even those scriptures, Bible, Quran, etc., tell us clearly that after some time, if you have lived a good life, you will go to God. Or if you have misbehaved, you will go to the other place. That means what? You are not really dead. But here specifically, Hinduism, Jainism, Buddhism believe in the theory of reincarnation. Why? There are certain reasons I will discuss briefly. The doctrine of reincarnation is exceedingly unpalatable to many people because it makes each one of us directly responsible for his or her present condition. You know, why are you like this? So, is it because of my karma? This is what Hindus say, Buddhists say, Jainists say. But this idea was not there in the law of karma if you accept. And it is there. As you sow, so you reap. But they don't take it to past life and future life. They take only one life which is going to God. If you lived a good life, then God will keep you in heaven. Otherwise, bye-bye. Bye means not death. Bye-bye means what? If this fellow is completely extinct, there is no problem. You are going to suffer for eternity, which is very irrational. For 100 years of misbehavior, even 100 years, how much time a man really misbehaves? Like a man saying to his wife, I love you the most in this world. Wife asks, how do you know you love me? Because I always remember you. All right, let us sit down and argue it out. How many hours do you sleep? 8 hours. Do you remember me at 8 hours? How many hours more remaining? 16 hours. Out of 16 hours, so when you are eating, when you are bathing, when you are working in your office, do you remember me? No. How do you expect me? When you are driving, do you remember me? How do you expect me to remember you? How much time the man really remembers? Very, very short time. For this few years of some kind of misbehavior, a man goes on suffering eternally. That is very irrational. Hinduism doesn't accept it all. But it does accept we are solely responsible for our own actions. I'll give some hard arguments also. You know, there was one football coach in England, some 10-15 years back. Once he made a remark about this, disabled people. It is because of their past karma. Instantaneously he was removed from his job. But the point we have to understand is, who is responsible? Why is this child born autistic or disabled? Why? Who is responsible? Are the parents responsible? Is the child responsible? Yes, the child is responsible. This is what Vedanta tells. How is it just now born? No, it has its past birth. But anyway, the argument here, it is uncomfortable for most of us because, especially when we are at a disadvantage or we are suffering, we are poor. Oh, we don't want to accept that we are responsible for our suffering. Everybody accepts responsibility for their happiness. I worked hard, I earned money, I am enjoying life. But no one wants to own that why we are suffering, and especially just born babies or whatever it is. This is one. And this doctrine of reincarnation, which at first seems so grim and heartless, actually implies a profoundly optimistic belief in the justice and order of the universe. What does that mean? That means that maybe we have suffered a lot, but is there any hope? Yes, there is a hope. What is the hope? From now on, you lead a good life and your future, both in this life and also in the future life, would be really bright. That is the hope. Oh, I have nothing done, nothing wrong, but I am being persecuted every time. Good people always suffer. Wicked people always enjoy. Some of us have got this kind of weird ideas. For a religious aspirant, such idea should not be there. God is there and He is the embodiment of justice, and whatever is happening, there is a reason for that. If you don't believe, you are not a devotee of God. Not only that, you are not a practical Vedanta. You who suffers if I don't accept justice of God? It's we who suffer. So every devotee must accept. Only thing is, instead of saying accept the justice of God, we say the will of God. Every devotee says happiness or unhappiness, it is the will of God. And if any devotee protests, I don't accept this will, I only accept one will of God. When He keeps me happy, I accept His will. But when He keeps me unhappy, see, that kind of argument doesn't prove we are devotees. Whatever happens, we have to accept. Okay, so this belief in the reincarnation, it gives us hope. It gives us the faith that everything is, there is a reason, there is a justice. In any case, the problem is none of us want to die. So this is the meaning of this abhinivesha, intense clinging to life. Those who are devotees. What is the lesson we have to derive? The lesson is, you are a devotee. That means you believe in God. That means you believe in the scripture. And what is the scripture telling? That as a good person, if you behave properly, if you are leading a life of righteousness, dharma, then your future is absolutely assured. This is what the meaning of this. Suppose another argument that comes is, suppose I become a devotee and I am pursuing my spiritual practices, I am not able to progress much. Suddenly death intervenes. Do I lose everything? Whatever I have done? No. Because you will take up exactly where you left off in future life. There is a future life. So that is why some of us have this really faith, but only thing is we do not allow it to come back. So, these are the arguments that Patanjali gives to us. Even most learned people who are talking, who are giving talks on do not fear, there is future life, the scripture tells, pundits, scholars. You see, I am talking all the time. But supposing today evening doctor comes in, you have only 2 hours. Do you know what I will do? Say, doctor, can I have a second opinion? You know, I don't want to die. Of course, if it is inevitable, I forcibly resign and I accept it. Okay, I accept it. But given a choice, I would not do that. Whereas you go to Sri Ramakrishna or Holy Mother or Swamiji, they have no fear. Why they have no fear? Because they know that this life is only one passing experience. That's all. They know it. Okay. Now we move on to number 10. Te prati prasavaheyaha sukshmaha. That te means when these obstacles or kleshas have been reduced to a vestigial form, they can be destroyed by resolving the mind back into its primal cause. Reduced to vestigial forms through the practice of Kriya Yoga, through the laya of the mind in samadhi, they are destroyed. Even though they are experienced, they lose the power of binding for the yogi. 11th aphorism, then I will come back to this. Dhyana heyaha tadvrittaya. In their fully developed form, they can be overcome through meditation. We are talking here about what? Kleshas. All our mind, all our life after life, we are moving through these 5. What is this? Avidya. Ignorance. Then avidya manifests as what? Mainly egotism. And egotism manifests in what ways? Attachments, likes, then hatreds, dislikes, then intense clinging to life. Do we know anything else other than these 3? Ahankara, then raga, dvesha and abhinivesha. Our whole life, this is called bondage. Now, how can we get rid of them? This is what Patanjali comes here. Then he says, first of all, through the practice of Kriya Yoga. Kriya Yoga means three. First, austerity, then study of the scriptures, constant study of oneself, and surrender to God. Through the constant practice of these three practices, all these kleshas or pain-bearing obstructions become less and less and less and unless and less and remain in a very, very fine form. That is called sukshma. But as we discussed elaborately in my last class before I left for USA, these kleshas can be in any of those four forms. They may be totally sleeping. They may be totally operative. Or they may be temporarily obstructed by some other klesha. Or they might have become very tanu. Tanu means very, very thin through the practice of spiritual disciplines. So in these two aphorisms, what Patanjali wants to tell us, meditation becomes fruitful and useful only when we have already made these kleshas very, very thin through a long, long practice of Kriya Yoga. Then the kleshas become very thin. How do they become thin? Very briefly I will discuss it. Now he says, Patanjali says, and it is practical experience. You go on observing yourself. Swamiji gives a beautiful example. See, supposing a bubble wants to rise in a lake. Where does it start? Somewhere deep inside. You can't see it. But it is there. And it is slowly coming up. And when it comes to the surface, becomes a bubble, then it is noticeable. So any desire that comes into our mind, and all our desires are classified into these three. What a practical, beautiful, all our desires are classified into three categories. We know what are the three categories? Just now we discussed. We want happiness, we want to avoid unhappiness, and the root cause of both our happiness and avoiding unhappiness is life. Therefore, intense clinging to life. These three are there life after life. What happens? Through the long practice of Kriya Yoga, our, what is called, attachments become very thin. How thin? Say, Ramakrishna gives an example. You draw a line over water. What happens next second? It disappears. I'll give you an example. One Swami Brahmananda scolded somebody. And after some time, the person who was scolded, he came back. And Maharaj was behaving as though nothing happened. As though everything is absolutely, he didn't scold at all. Then he was asked, Maharaj, were you not angry? You get it in the Eternal Companion. He said, our anger is like a line drawn on water. The moment you draw the line, already it is disappearing. And when they get angry, no, it is not they who get angry. It is God, for some reason, wants to bestow His grace, and all their anger is a real blessing on each one of us. When do we realize that? Very difficult. That's why Holy Mother said, misery is a gift of God. So these attachments. A person, do you think a spiritual aspirant hates anybody? Dislike is there. What is the strong form of dislike? Hatred. What is the very thin form of hatred? Dislike. I don't like it. But it's not hatred. It's not hatred. Nobody hates cockroach. You know, we dislike cockroaches. Nobody likes, even I don't like cockroach. But we don't hate the cockroaches. Only a person who is very wicked, we hate such person. But do you think, say, Ramakrishna was kicked? Do you think that he cherished hatred towards that man who kicked him? Not at all. In fact, he doesn't even remember. Only occasionally he remembered. In a yogi, this raga and dvesha, attachment and its opposite, likes and dislikes, become very, very thin. Next, abhinivesha. What is abhinivesha? When a person has progressed so much in spiritual life, his attachment to body becomes absolutely minimal. How does it become minimal? Because for two reasons. One reason is, it's such a beautiful thought. When a person really dives deep into meditational state, he gets such a tremendous happiness. That is there any bodily happiness which can be compared to that? You know, the happiness which we derive even from reading a nice novel, what bodily happiness can equal to that? There is nothing. Do you get what I'm talking about? Bodily happiness or pleasures are very, very insignificant compared to the joys that one gets through intellectually. That's why ananda or bliss or it has five layers. I think I discussed it before, but just for our sake, five layers, each layer is incomparably, unimaginably greater in both quality and quantity than the lower one. The first one is called Vishaya Ananda. That is the pleasures we derive from when our sense organs come into contact with sense objects. The second is intellectual pleasure called Medhananda. The third is called aesthetic pleasures that one, an artist, gets. The fourth is the happiness one gets from practicing dharma. This is called Dharmananda. And the last is the happiness one gets, one has the vision of God, Brahmananda. Sri Ramakrishna simply reduced these five into three. Said Vishayananda, Bhajanananda and Brahmananda. I discussed it. Bhajanananda doesn't mean singing songs. Bhajanananda means that tremendous joy one gets from leading a dharmic life, devotee's life. So much of difference is there. Now what is my point? My point is when a spiritual aspirant has progressed so much through years or lives of spiritual practice, he must be getting the very high type of happiness. In fact, in that state, the body becomes positively obstructive because he wants to dwell on it. Simple example would be, Sri Ramakrishna would like to be in Samadhi. I'm going to ask you a question. How long would Sri Ramakrishna like to be in Samadhi? Forever? But can he? He cannot. Why? What is the problem? Body. Because body requires, he has to eat food, he has to drink water, he has to take some rest also. And that's what Swami Vivekananda asked, if you remember. When Sri Ramakrishna asked Swami Vivekananda, Narendranath, what do you want? What was his reply? No, you have to be very clear about it. Otherwise, partial understanding comes. I want to be all the time in Samadhi. Then he put a clause. Every few days, 3-4 days, I want to come down, have food. Because if food is not there, body will not be there. So in that state of exuberant bliss, this very idea of body becomes abominable. I'll give another example also. You know, Holy Mother, once she had an experience, went into another state. After a long time she came. Later on she was describing that. What did she say? I was in such a high state. I was there with Sri Ramakrishna and somebody made me sit by the side of Sri Ramakrishna. And I was in supreme bliss. Then what did she say? I had to come down. You know, she made a very beautiful expression. She said, into this filthy body, I had to come down. It was abominable to me. But I made up because my children are there. I have to come down. That is why we can't understand why they want to go all the time into Samadhi. See, Ramakrishna said, the very nature of my mind is always to be merged in Samadhi. So I bind myself with some desires so that I can come down and then talk to devotees and pass on the knowledge, etc. Anyway, so with these two aphorisms, what Patanjali is going to tell us is that, first of all, through the long practice of Kriya Yoga, we have to thin all these kleshas, our ahankara, And our attached raga, attachment, our dvesha, dislike, our hatred, and our intense clinging to life, we have to make it thinner and thinner. As we progress in spiritual life, they naturally become thinner. But they remain there. They cannot be. So how long will they remain? Until the mind is existing. Therefore, what we have to do, second is dhyana heyaha tadvrittaya. All this through deep meditation. Here, through deep meditation, he means asampragnata samadhi. Through the highest state of samadhi. And what is the highest state of samadhi? It is also called nirvikalpa samadhi. Nirvikalpa samadhi means what? Where there is no mind. It is beyond the mind. That's what Sri Ramakrishna used to call pure mind. If there is no mind, where are the kleshas? Because all this egotism, attachment, hatred, this clinging to life, they all exist where? Now, so that we can understand clearly, I am going to give this example. We all suffer through our waking state, dream state, through all these five, avidya. When you are in deep sleep, do you have attachment? Do you have hatred? Do you have clinging to body? Why? Because the mind in that state is practically non-functional. I said practically non. There is a bit of mind, but I won't go into that topic now. But it is practically as though there is no mind. And that is why it gives us the greatest happiness. Having discussed the dhyana heyaha tad vrittayaha, then comes, I mentioned, klesha moolaha karmashayo drishta adrishta janma vedaniyaha. A man's latent tendencies, that means tendencies created through many past births, have been created by his past thoughts and actions, and these tendencies will bear fruits both in this life and in lives to come. Sati mule tad vipako jati ayur bhogaha. So long as this root means these past impressions remain in the mind, it will bear fruits. What type of fruits? Three type of fruits, such as rebirth, a long or a short life, and the experiences of pleasure and pain. What Patanjali wants to tell, each one of us are the result of our past karma done in the past life. And that the result of that past life is three. In which species we are born, how long are we going to live in this world, and what type of experiences, whether we are born for pleasant life, happy life, or unhappy life, and what type of happiness, how deep is that happiness or unhappiness. These three, which species, the length of life, and our experiences. This is all according to Vedanta and Patanjali, the result of our past actions in the form of this karmashaya. Then he says, experiences of pleasure and of pain are the fruits of merit and demerit, dharma and adharma, punya and punya respectively. Parinama tapa samskara dukkai gunavritti virodhach dukkham eva sarvam vivekinaha. But the man of spiritual discrimination regards all these experiences as painful. For even the enjoyment of a present pleasure is painful since we fear its loss. Past pleasure is painful because renewed cravings arise from the impressions it has left upon the mind. And how can any happiness be lasting if it depends only upon our moods? For our moods are constantly changing as one or another of the ever-varying gunas seizes control of the mind. So, what we are going to discuss is these most wonderful things. After he had elaborated how these kleshas have to be thinned out and then finally merged. That is our goal. But where are we? Here, right now. As men, as women, of such age, of such job, of such experiences. So he is dwelling. Wherever we are, we have to start there. And every one of us are not certainly in the same state. What is the cause of this state? The result of our karmas. And they make us happiness, happy or unhappy. But ultimately, what is our goal? Very often we say our goal is pleasure or happiness. But then Patanjali comes and tells and says, this life, even if it's most pleasant life, life in heaven itself is a most painful thing. How can it be painful? In comparison with our present life, heavenly life is very, very pleasurable, happy. But in comparison with what we are really, and which we have forgotten, in comparison with infinity, any amount of finite thing is absolutely rubbish. So he wants to bring that dispassion, that discrimination, which we will take in our next class. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.